Scott, have you seen Dersu Uzala?
I have seen Dersu Uzala, and I first saw it at Kalamazoo College in 1980 when I was a student at Western Michigan University. It was part of their film series. It blew me away. It was not what I expected. I didn't understand where the whole non-Japanese aspect of it. Having seen Rashomon and Seven Samurai, I really expected it to be another Japanese, you know, either historical film or contemporary film.
Yeah, well, this is one of the, Dersu Uzala is one of the later films made by the great Japanese director Akira Kurosawa. This is our third episode on Kurosawa. We've been discussing ones that are less famous than, you mentioned Rashomon, Seven Samurai, movies like that. So far we've recommended Stray Dog, Hidden Fortress, and High and Low. But this is even less known, and it was made in 1975 in Manchuria. Is it the only film he made outside of Japan, as far as you know?
As far as I know, I think that this was, and this was one of his final films before, if not the final film, before he had a big break and then came back with the backing of Spielberg and George Lucas and people like that, and made Ron and Kagamusha.
Yeah. Right. But this is when he was, I mean, you know, we talked about this in our previous episodes, how even though he's this, you know, many people think the greatest of Japanese directors, and he'd made these groundbreaking movies in the 40s and especially in the 50s, he couldn't raise money in Japan. They didn't think he was successful enough. And so, and before he got the backing of these young tyros in Hollywood, he made this one where he went to the Soviet Union. He worked some of it shot at the Moss Film, which is the Moscow film studio that goes all the way back to the silent era, and as far as I know is probably still there. And they financed it, and he made this movie about, it's a Russian and Siberian Manchurian story. It's not one of his masterpieces. I wouldn't necessarily classify it that way, but it's a really touching story. And Kurosawa is an incredibly beautiful filmmaker visually. So it's saying a lot, but I would say this is one of his most beautiful films.
And except for some of the scenes that happen towards the end of the film, which is probably the studio scenes, it's a nature-based film. It's all filmed outside.
Yeah, they shot it. It took them 2 years to shoot on location in Siberia, sometimes in freezing weather, which we see. I mean, yeah, it almost feels documentary-like at times. And it was shot in 70 millimeter too, which is, I wish somewhere out there was an amazing, you know, version of it. It's not one of these movies that hasn't been restored. You're not going to find a beautiful, you know, version of it. I watched it on more or less a regular DVD.
And I watched it on the Criterion streaming channel, and it did. There seemed to be some sort of flaw there that I don't know what it was. It was sort of a flickering. It didn't take away from the wonderful story, and even the visuals. You could still tell that this was a beautifully shot film.
Yeah, the available versions that you can see streaming or find on disc are good. They're just not. They got it. It's got to be better than that. You wish they could make a version that was up to the standards of that 70 millimeter.
And maybe there's a pristine negative or print that's in Russia, that's in a vault somewhere. One would hope.
It was probably owned by the Soviet Union, which doesn't exist anymore, right? Who knows? But anyway, what it is, it's a story based on an early 20th century memoir by a Russian soldier, Vladimir Arsenev. And it's about this friendship, this deep friendship that develops between him and Dersu Uzala, the title character, who's this Siberian hunter and trapper. And in the first main sequence of the movie, it's 1902, and Arsenev is leading a platoon of Russian soldiers on a mission to Manchuria to chart the border with Russia. So it's like a surveying mission. And they come across this Siberian hunter, Dersu Uzala, in the woods, and they hire him as their guide, because you can see they don't really know their way around.
Although actually, he comes upon them. He walks into their campsite one night.
Oh, that's right. So, and he helps them in situation after situation. I mean, this is not just uncharted woods type territory and tundra, but it's Siberia. I mean, it's really cold and all that. And he helps them over and over again. And then just the way he is as a character, you know, he's this, he models a kind of ethic of the forest. He leaves, they work on a, they find a cabin and they work on it. And then he's like, give me food so I can leave it. And they're like, why would you leave food? And it's like, because the next person who comes will need it. And he has this,
it's specifically kind of, rice, salt, and matches.
Oh, that's right. Because he knows that it's going to be things that are survival oriented. Yeah. And he seems to have a sort of animist faith. He has this deep faith in nature. He calls all creatures men.
Or people.
Or people.
Okay. Yeah, he calls people, and he calls even the water as people.
Right. The earth, the wind, the water, the sun and moon, they're people.
And he's also, he's saving them at times. He actually saves their lives, particularly the captain.
Well, this is maybe the most amazing sequence in the movie. Dersu and Arsenev are stuck in this windstorm by a frozen lake, and it's just completely desolate, flat. There's this frozen lake and then just nothingness.
And it's and the sun is setting.
The sun is setting, and then this incredible, this huge wind is coming up, and it's like they could just die in this windstorm out with no shelter whatsoever. And Dersu, you know, kind of tells Arsenev what to do, and out of what seems like to be nothing, just weeds that are growing, he builds this kind of special shelter that saves both of their lives.
He's also, you see his humor as well, and the fact that he's very empathetic, you know, beyond his animistic thing, and he understands the other people. They do encounter, I'm assuming there were Chinese, they're Chinese people that are also living in the area. They encounter some bandits.
Right. Yeah, they are. Yeah. So they're not, I think that the Chinese are kind of, they don't come from that area, right?
Well, you mentioned that it's Manchuria is part of China. Is it not?
No, I haven't done my research. I mean, I think it's now part of China.
Okay. And so
but
at
if
that
you
time,
go back earlier, you know, these are tribes who are by no means, you know, Chinese, right? So the native people there. So yeah, they show some, you actually see some conflict and
although there's not, this is not a movie where there's any sort of big sort of action conflict that you, it's all men within the nature, almost like Moby Dick. You know, the idea that nature is more, nature doesn't care about us. It just is.
It is. It's one of those man versus nature movies. And I kept thinking, you know, we're so used to this when you see people from different cultures and all that, there's going to be some kind of conflict, right? But there never was really any conflict between Dersu and these Russian soldiers, especially the main one who's the main character.
The captain, obviously there's a bond there that you very quickly you see the bond, but even all the other soldiers, there's the first part where it's one platoon. And then the second part of the movie, there's another
5 years later.
There's another platoon, a different platoon of soldiers. And you see how all of the soldiers are won over by this guy.
Yeah. They all, right. You think there's going to be soldiers are going to be grumbling or not like him. Why does the captain, you know, give him all his attention? But no, I guess the one dark side is you find out some sad things about Dersu's past and why he just lives in the woods.